We're ready for our next case, 20-2175, United States v. Crowner. Ms. Hart, you may proceed once you unmute yourself. You're muted now.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm actually Mr. Hart, counsel for appellate.
I apologize.
It's okay, please, Your Honor. Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court, Nicholas Hart, on behalf of appellant David Crowner. Mr. Crowner contends that the district court abused its discretion in four ways when denying his motion for compassionate release. First, the district court abused its discretion by applying improper limitations on its consideration of his motion and of the medical conditions, which he contends form the basis for his reduction in sentence, namely that those medical conditions could not have existed at the time of the offense conduct, and that those medical conditions must be completely incapacitating and permanently debilitating or disabling in order for there to be extraordinary and compelling circumstances meriting to release. As for the medical conditions, for the court's determination that medical conditions cannot be present at the time of the offense conduct, this is contrary to abuse of discretion because it's contrary to the statute. 3582C1A places only a single limitation on what may merit extraordinary and compelling circumstances. And that limitation is that a reduction sentence cannot be solely based upon rehabilitation. But in the court's
didn't the judge find that there were compelling circumstances? You won that point, did you not?
While that point was conceded below, Your Honor, the court actually did not find that there were extraordinary and compelling circumstances meriting release. Rather, the court found that it could only consider his two new conditions, as the court qualified it, which were Bell's palsy and neck problems, and that those were not completely incapacitating or permanently disabling.
That's your characterization of what the sentencing judge did, but I thought the judge was saying, given that he's got compelling reasons, then we look at the 3552 factors, and in considering his danger to the community, the judge was saying, look, he was a real danger before when he had almost all these conditions, and these additional conditions don't change things markedly. If he could run a drug operation before, he can still run a drug operation even with these two additional disabilities. Why is that an improper characterization of what the district judge did? What am I missing here?
When you read the opinion, Your Honor, it goes through two phases. And the initial phase seems clear to me that what the court is talking about is 3582C, and that it's not until the third paragraph where the court begins discussing the 3553A factors. And I think this is part of the difficulty in the court's order. But we're obviously not going to if the court believes that the district court found extraordinary and compelling circumstances, well, we agree with that they're present. That's not the way that we read the order, Your Honor. And
well, regardless of whether he did or not, it's established in this circuit anyway that the judge can deny relief simply because the 3553 factors aren't satisfied. And the judge did find that, did he not? That those factors were not satisfied. Let me put it this way: that considering those factors, a reduction in sentence was not appropriate. Did say that, did he not?
The way that I read held, Your Honor, or hauled, is that if the district court said that independently in just considering the 3553A factors that compassionate release would not be warranted, then that finding alone would be sufficient. But in this case, the district court didn't do that. The district court didn't point out or say that any independent step of the analysis alone merit was forming the basis for its decision. Rather, the court seemed to engage in a balancing test and just concluded generally. So we would agree that it wouldn't have been an abuse of discretion if the district court explicitly stated that on the 3553A factors alone, that the court was denying compassionate release. But here the court engages in a quasi balancing test and to come to that conclusion. And we disagree, Your Honor, that the consideration of dangerousness, that the discussion in the second paragraph of the decision is part of the 3553A analysis of the court. That seems because of the references to completely incapacitating or permanently disabling, which comes from the policy statement, and because of the references to the medical conditions that are included in that second paragraph of the decision, that this is a discussion of 3582 C1A and not a discussion of the 3553A factors. So based on that discussion, we believe there are two abuses of discretion there. One is the limitations that are imposed on the consideration of the medical conditions. And the second is denying under 3582 C1A for dangerousness.
Let me stop you for a minute. So it seems to me there's a bit of overlap between what you're talking about and 3553A, because I look at what the court said, and I'm looking at this part of the order that says factors considered, where he checked that box, and then he talks about why he imposed the sentence he did. And go ahead and just skip down to the second paragraph there. And he says, that's where he talks about the new conditions. And he says, therefore, the existence of these medical conditions cannot support his argument that he's no longer a danger to society. So then you look over at 3553A, A2C, one of the factors is to protect the public from further crimes of defendant. Seems to me, I mean, even if it's also a relevant consideration in 3582, as you're discussing, it's a relevant consideration under 3553A, and that it's arguable that he was giving a good explanation for application of 3553A factors. Because then he goes on, he talks about, hey, he served less than 42% of his sentence, and that's going to create a disparity in sentencing. So you flip over to 3553A, and it also talks about trying to have, you know, no disparities or as minimal disparities in sentencing. And we can go on here, the seriousness of the offense right here, 3553A2A, to reflect the seriousness of the offense, to provide just punishment. I mean, all of these things that he's saying seem to fall squarely within the considerations of 3553A. So even if you have 3582 in the background here, it seems clear to me, or at least that it doesn't seem clear to me that he's doing what you say he is. It seems at least as plausible that he's making these arguments under 30, or he's making these justifications under 3553A.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I agree that there's overlap between 3582 and 3553A. I mean, even the medical condition portion and the condition of a defendant is considered as part of the 3553A factors. But I think that the district court's order here, when we're talking about the second paragraph of that summary order, is clearly not talking about the 3553A factors because of what it references. When it's referencing the completely incapacitating or permanently disabling, which is language specifically taken from the policy and the guideline related to compassionate release, that paragraph does not see it is addressing these issues within the 3582 context.
Well, the court made it pretty clear, in my opinion, that he considered the 3553A factors. Take a look at the record on page 74. So I don't understand what your argument is, that he forgot to take into account the 3553A factors, or that he didn't make it clear enough. He's only got to make it adequate for appellate review, and it seems to me he's done that.
Yes, Your Honor. So the argument regarding the 3553A factors is that there's an abuse of discretion because he did not make it clear enough what he considered.
He made it very clear.
Well, how about this idea? So what he said was, the court has considered all other factors under 18 U.S.C. 3553A, which also weigh against a sentence reduction, and he didn't explain further. But doesn't the word other in that sentence suggest that his previous discussion was his explanation of the 3553A factors? I mean, it just seems to me that all of this is funneling down into an analysis under 3553A. And I get your argument about the completely incapacitating or permanently disabling language up above, but I also don't see why a district judge shouldn't be able to say, as part of determining whether someone is going to be dangerous to the public when they're released, consider that, because it seems to me under that factor, they could say he's not a danger to society anymore. He's completely incapacitated and permanently disabled. He can't do anything anymore. But the converse of that is he's not completely incapacitated and totally disabled, so he still can harm the public. So I get your point about the commentary, but I don't think it stops there.
Yes, Your Honor, I do see what you're saying. I just disagree with the reading of the order, right? I mean, go ahead, Judge. I'm sorry.
Even if you're reading the order correctly, I believe there's a footnote that says even though the guidelines regarding compassionate release are not binding, that it's not an abuse of discretion for the sentencing court to consider them in weighing the 3553A factors. Doesn't that end your argument? If that's correct, what's left of your argument?
So there is that footnote in Hald, Your Honor, but I disagree in the application to this order where the district court is not saying just that it considered it. It's saying that because of these issues, it cannot form a basis, right? So when the district court says that medical conditions and the consideration towards dangerous cannot form a basis for compassionate release in the second paragraph of that summary order, then that's going past just consideration and using the policy as a guidepost, as is talked about in McGee, and going towards using it as a categorical rule preventing compassionate release. And I only have about a minute left, so if there's no other questions, I would like to reserve that minute for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. Ms. Walters, now I ask you to unmute. Good. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. Tiffany Walters, may it please the court. Tiffany Walters for the United States. The district court acted well within its discretion in denying Mr. Kroner's compassionate release motion on the 3553A factors, and this court should affirm on that basis. This court's intervening decisions in Hald, McGee, and Mau Mau make clear that the 3553A factors are an independent basis on which the district court may deny a motion for a sentence reduction. Because the district court here expressly based its decision on the 3553A factors, that finding alone is sufficient to affirm. As Judge Carson noted earlier, the district court here considered the nature and circumstances of the offense, in which the court pointed out that Mr. Croner was committed a serious drug offense while in possession of three loaded firearms and ammunition. The court considered that although Mr. Croner had faced a guideline sentence of 228 to 270 months, he received a 144-month sentence and felt that it would create, the district court felt it would create sentencing disparities for Mr. Croner to only serve 42% of that sentence. And the court considered whether or not Mr. Croner remained a danger to society. Now, Mr. Croner now challenges that on the basis that finding was based on the policy statement issued by the Sentencing Commission and not on the 3553A factors. As a threshold matter, the United States would point out that that argument was not raised before the district court, and it was not raised in the opening brief. The defendants in McGee and Mau Mau were able to raise that argument, and many other defendants, as this court is well aware, have raised that argument. So Mr. Croner, too, had the opportunity to present that argument and didn't. And he has not argued for plain error review in his reply brief, and thus this argument is waived. But even if the court were to exercise its discretion and reach this argument, the court's decision plainly considered his danger to society in terms of the 3553A factors. As Judge Carson again noted, the district court was required to consider his dangerousness to society under 3553A2C, which requires the court to consider the need for the sentence to protect the public from future crimes of the defendant. In fact, it would have been legal error for the court to not consider an applicable portion of 3553A. And the court went on to indicate that the district court went on to indicate that it considered all other factors under 3553A. So to the extent the district court did not include the specific statutory citation, it's plainly referenced in the decision and included in the 3553A finding. And even if the district court did consider danger to society in terms of the policy statement, it wasn't an abuse of discretion to consider that, where the court didn't indicate it was constrained by the policy statement. There's nothing in there that refers to the policy statement or indicates that the court felt its discretion was limited by it. And it certainly could consider the policy statement as guidance, as noted by this court in Hald.
I don't recall the specific language Mr. Hart was referring to, but he did say that the sentencing judge, in speaking about not being totally disabled, et cetera, saying, so I can't do something. What was the judge saying he couldn't do?
I believe Mr. Hart was referring to the sentence where the court indicates that defendant has had most of these conditions at the time he committed his crimes in 2016. Therefore, the existence of these medical conditions cannot support his argument that he is no longer a danger to society. Not refer to the policy statement. It refers to the argument that Mr. Croner is making regarding whether or not his conditions can prevent him from being a danger to society. And reasonably, the district court is saying, if you were able to commit a crime with these conditions in 2016, that's not a basis for saying that you would be unable to commit a crime with those conditions in 2021, should the court grant its motion. And the court went on to say, recognize that the defendant had new medical conditions, but considered whether or not those were completely incapacitating and permanently disabling. Now, Mr. Croner is reading those terms to refer back to the extraordinary or compelling reasons in the policy statement, but those terms don't appear anywhere in the policy statement. And this court has indicated that it's relevant to consider the medical conditions in relation to the 3553A factors. The court properly considered them in this context to determine whether or not Mr. Croner had established that his medical conditions completely incapacitated him or permanently disabled him. And here, Mr. Croner had presented no evidence of his prognosis and what the long-term impact of his conditions would be, whether or not there was potential for recovery. And And in fact, the reality remains that even though he may be confined to a wheelchair, Mr. Croner was convicted of firearm offenses, and an individual in possession of a firearm can present a danger to society, even in the context of a wheelchair. In addition, the district court relied on the absence of sufficient information regarding the conditions that Mr. Croner would live in and during his release. That was well within the court's discretion to consider that, particularly given that Mr. Croner was requesting release based on his medical conditions. Mr. Croner had a burden to demonstrate that, in fact, his conditions upon release would be sufficient to prevent any recidivism and would address his medical concerns and improve his medical condition, and he has not done so. If the court has no further questions, the United States would rest on its brief and ask the court to affirm because the district court rested its decision on the 3553A factors, which provide an independent basis to deny Ms. Croner's motion for compassionate release.
There appear to be any further questions. Ms. Walters, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hart, you have a minute remaining. A little over a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just two brief points. As for the preservation and waiver issue, while Mr. Croner did not use the magic words that the government is requesting that Mr. Croner had used or specifically argued as related to McGee, Mr. Croner did submit arguments to the district court and as part of the opening brief that there are still extraordinary and compelling circumstances, and there still should be a grant of compassionate release, even though we are going outside, even though it may not fit within the policy statement of requirement of completely incapacitating or permanently disabling. Just as to the reentry plan, we'll rest on the brief, which states that it's a clearly erroneous finding of fact. When there was sufficient information submitted of where he would go, how he would support himself, where he would receive medical care, whose custody he would be in, and that U.S. probation had even inspected and approved of that release plan. For those reasons, Mr. Croner requests that the court reverse and remand this matter.
Thank you, counsel. Submitted, counsel are excused. Turn to our next case.